The EU ministers have met to see how they can salvage the Iran nuclear deal. The EU foreign policy chief says that the EU is working on a set of measures to make sure that the nuclear agreement is preserved and the economic investments from the European side, but also from other sides in the world, are protected. But is the European Union doing enough? Why didn't the EU try to get Iran's its fair share from the deal while the US was in the deal? Just a couple of questions we'll be asking in this edition of The Debate.
In a joint statement following their meeting on Monday in the Belgian capital Brussels, EU foreign affairs ministers said they are moving forward in full unity to try and preserve the 2015 landmark Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, JCPOA, Iran nuclear agreement.
One of the outcomes of the meeting today is the decision to set up a sort of network of contact points of all the member states that would help us in Brussels coordinate not only the European Union measures, but the European Union measures together with and in coordination with the measures that single member states would put in place.
The EU says it will present concrete solutions, quote, in the coming weeks, designed to give companies a legal shield to ensure they do business with Iran in defiance of new US sanctions against the Islamic Republic that are due to be rolled out from the 6th of August. Analysts say EU firms do want to trade with Iran, but they will not be willing to jeopardize potentially more lucrative business with the United States.
The difficulty is that the convergence of interest then has to translate into a common policy. And this common policy cannot conflict directly with the transatlantic agreements.
One foreign affairs minister called on his counterparts to engage more intensively with the administration in Washington, and he claims to have received support.
If the EU and the US are moving in different directions on multiple policy areas linked to the Middle East, that is not a recipe for stability.
By pulling out of an international agreement underpinned by the United Nations, experts say Donald Trump is isolating the US and is breaking the law. During a debate in the European Parliament last week, it was claimed Trump will attempt to divide and conquer by mounting pressure on individual EU governments to follow his lead. Clearly, this is another big test for the EU to show unity, something it has failed at in the past. Jerome Hughes, Press TV, Brussels.
We're guest joining us for this edition of The Debate. We have Dr. Kaveh Afiyasiabi, author and political scientist, who joins us from Boston. We also have William Morris, Secretary General at the Next Century Foundation, who joins us from London. I'd like to welcome you both. And Dr. Afiyasiabi, let me first start with you. Time is running out for the EU pretty fast. Iran announced that the end of May is going to be the deadline for the EU to preserve the Iran nuclear deal. How do you think the EU can do that in a matter of days when the end of May comes?
Well, I'm sure the EU can take some concrete steps, such as what they did today. And this was a welcome step, the statement that they made in strong defense of the JCPOA. And, you know, there are talks of passing this blocking regulation to provide legal protection for the European firms involved in Iran trade, and there's a whole range of other activities, such as extending government finance credit, promoting loans by the European Investment Bank, promoting small and medium-sized European firm trade with Iran, and a range of other activities that are on the plate right now being discussed through various committees, per the recent statement of Iran's deputy foreign minister, Mr. Araghchi, who expressed optimism after his meetings with the European counterparts at the JCPOA meeting. And I think that, you know, this is a very crucial litmus test for Europe, its credibility, identity, and sovereignty. Failure is not an option, and they fully realize that. And they need to take retaliatory measures against the US if it goes forward with imposing penalties on Europeans involved with Iran trade and finance. So I hope that the Europeans can pull through and succeed in demonstrating unity of will against American bullying. And there's a mismatch between the political statements and the mass exodus of the European firms from Iran, and the gap needs to be closed.
Well, William Morris, if you noticed there, Dr. Afiyasiabi talked about how there's a range of options that are being mulled over, that's going to be done. There's going to be lines of credit that's going to be given. There's going to be this done, that done. Well, first of all, why weren't all these things done when the U.S. was in the deal? Why is the EU acting the way it is right now when it should have done that during the time that the U.S. was inside this JCPOA?
Well, perhaps you're right. I mean, we would expect better progress before this point. But nonetheless, it is good that the European Union is really grasping this issue. And our interlocutor in Boston, the doctor, was very wise in what he said. I think now what is key is that the Europe has to put forward one major signal offer. And I think that is possibly in terms of international loans, because Iran has had to be dependent on China for much of its international borrowing, and it would, I'm sure, prefer to have a more balanced borrowing field for its major banks, its six or eight major banks in Iran. So that would be one flagship policy that the Europeans could deliver and deliver very substantially on, and that would be good. It's more difficult for them to provide guarantees to international companies that might lose business in the USA, and much more difficult, and so they're in a more difficult position there. But why was this not done sooner? It is maybe the pressure is on now, and here we are, we're at this point, and let's take advantage of it, and let's see Iran move forward within the JCPOA.
Yeah, I'm in no shape or form trying to, Dr. Afiyasiabi, shoot down the EU, because the EU is after preserving the nuclear deal. But perhaps instead of us saying what the EU can do, Dr. Afiyasiabi, maybe we should say what Iran's leader has demanded from the EU. Because after all, it was, this involves them as part of the signatories. And one of the things UK, France, and Germany, Iran's leader has said, must continue to buy Iranian crude oil and protect Iran's markets and banking system from the impact of the new U.S. sanctions. There's some other demands also that Iran's leader has met. Do you think that EU is going to come together and meet those demands?
I certainly hope so. There's not a huge divide between the 6-point preconditions that Iran's supreme leader set and the kinds of verbal guarantees that we're seeing coming from Europe nowadays. There's talk of euro-denominated trade with Iran, direct deposit of oil funds in Iran's central bank, getting the European Central Bank involved, perhaps setting up a special European bank for trade with Iran. So I think that Europeans need to be imaginative and find creative ways in order to bypass the U.S. sanctions and promote sanction-busting trade and finance with Iran. Certainly, the big European banks are hesitant to get involved with Iran, but over the past couple of years, literally hundreds of European, non-European, smaller banks have started business with Iran, and many of them have continued to do so since March, May 8th announcement by Trump on withdrawal from the JCPOA. And hopefully that trend will continue, and those banks, will grow in number, and with the greater legal protection by the European governments, the stage will be set, because the U.S. sanctions are very unpopular around the world. We just heard a very, very key statement by India that they will not comply with unilateral U.S. sanctions. And I would give it even more weight than the statement from EU today, actually, because India is number two oil importer from Iran. Europe is number three. So for Europe to preserve the oil imports, which they badly need, given the volatile oil market and the lack of supply, they need to take steps, and the legal barriers, the regulation is one important element of it. But I must add that there is a hidden clause in that regulation that provides for, you know, the individual countries to comply with the U.S. sanctions if it hurts their interests too much. So in order to write this new regulation and include the U.S. sanctions, I think they have to address that hidden clause and make sure that that does not surface down the road and neutralize the whole political effort.
Well, I was searching, William Morris, for some reactions from EU officials on this. Not reactions, but their vantage point and their what their feelings are about what's happening. And I think one of the best ones that I saw, and I should have mentioned this probably before Iran's leaders' demands, is in reaction to what Michael Pompeo said just days ago, or maybe it's a week at this point, at the Heritage Foundation. And this particular European diplomat said, listening to Michael Pompeo was like taking a cold shower. We're going to try to cling to that deal. But we're under no illusions. Your reaction to that?
Yes, well, I mean, the 12-point plan or whatever it was from America, it's maximalism. It's shooting for the moon. I mean, the idea that there should be further negotiations between Iran and the United States of America in some shape or form is fine. That's not a problem. And the idea that such further negotiations should put everything on the table, that's fine. But the 12-point plan, of course, is incredible. And really, I mean, Iran is not going to surrender its interests in Syria or whatever for this. But Iran could negotiate. Iran has already placed some restrictions on its missile program. It's been very generous to the international community in that respect. Iran could re-enter negotiations. I see nothing wrong with that, just with the obvious caveat that these demands are more like somebody, a cold shower is one way of describing it. I mean, they're not practical or sensible, but they're put there to be melodramatic. I think there's desire to play to the gallery and make the big statement from the U.S. administration. But sensible heads will have discussions. One trusts.
Well, Dr. Afzalzabi, when taking a step back here. And correct me if I'm wrong by looking at it this way. So you have this deal that's been in the works for maybe 10 to 12 years, and then you have a change of government in the U.S., and the U.S. pulls out. And Donald Trump and its Secretary of State, they lay out these demands and their conditions. And then you have Iran, who has been violated in this deal for the past years, by non-adherence by the United States, and it's Iran that has to start complying with the one that pulled out of the deal? That just doesn't make sense, does it?
Well, unfortunately, we live in a topsy-turvy world where power speaks rights, and hopefully the very stern, resolute global reaction and denunciation of this unilateral breach of this verifiable international agreement by the United States will force a retreat by the Trump administration. And, I'm cautiously optimistic about that, depending on Europe's ability to pressure the U.S., not just with talk and persuasion, but with the stick of retaliatory measures, which is absolutely necessary at this point, because U.S. has violated an agreement, and it's in breach of an international agreement that is backed by the United Nations. And therefore, I think that to some extent, the U.S. is bluffing. We saw the Trump administration's reversal on a Chinese firm that was accused of doing business with Iran ZTE. And if they dare to penalize the European companies, given the very strong anti-U.S. mood in Europe today, I think there would be a revolt against the U.S. And, you know, the European governments will take very decisive measures against that. So there is a very good chance that the U.S. is really bluffing when it says we're going to penalize the European companies. And we need to take that into consideration. Other than that, I really think, and I've said that before, European Union should seek advisory opinion from the International Court of Justice on the legal status of the JCPOA, which is an international agreement backed by international law. That would be another political and legal leverage against Washington for the European capitals to play with.
Well, how about if they do something else, William Morris, following that train of thought by Dr. Afriyasabi? How about what Iran's leader has said to the EU? If you have good intentions of saving the deal, why don't you take the U.S. to the U.N., bring the resolution to the U.N. Security Council protesting U.S. violation of the Resolution 2231 endorsing the Iran nuclear deal? Of course, it's going to get vetoed, but just that mere fact, wouldn't that prove EU sincerity? Again, Iran's leader has said that.
Yes, I don't think it's really relevant or particularly helpful to use the UN as a platform in the way the United States does, and there's a lot of pomposity goes on in the UN Security Council. I would rather see Iran maintain the JCPOA itself as it is doing and continue to do so. It has the sympathy and respect of the entire world. It is America that is wrong-footed by President Trump's move. America that is in isolation because of this, not Iran. If Iran were to actually pull back from the JCPOA at this stage, then it would no doubt please Iran's enemies greatly, greatly. That would be a delight to a nation like Israel. They would be thrilled. You have to look at the picture. Iran is actually in the strong position. If Iran pulls out of the JCPOA, it removes its enormous international advantage on the world stage now. And at the moment, the European Union is scrambling to find ways to help to salvage this deal. So let them work at it. Let them work hard. But don't cancel the JCPOA prematurely, because then all the energy goes to resolve this matter. And the energy is immense now. And Iran is in the strong position.
Well, Dr. Afriyasabi, I'm going to say my question that I said previous in another way. So EU wants to preserve the nuclear...
Can I respond to what your guest just said?
Of course. Go ahead.
I respectfully disagree with his understanding of the importance of the UN in this matter, because for a moment, think about if Iran had violated, Nikki Haley would be screaming everybody's ears out at the Security Council right now, and resolution after resolution condemning Iran. So why this double standard and hypocrisy? U.S. has violated this agreement, an agreement that the Security Council has embraced and embedded and endorsed. And therefore, this matter should go to the Security Council to embarrass the United States for being a rogue pariah nation that has no qualm about trampling its own agreements and, you know, disregarding international norms and principles. If Security Council shows inaction, then it should be taken to the General Assembly with a resolution by the General Assembly, and, you know, 99% of the world now supports Iran in this matter. So why leave this very important international forum to the adversary who has used it and abused it at every opportunity it can? And now that Iran has the upper hand morally and legally, we should not go near the UN. I just don't understand and don't agree with that.
William Morris, do you have a reaction?
Well, of course, France was at the heart of the negotiations for the JCPOA, and some of its key diplomats were working very hard on this issue. And perhaps a nation like France would like to take it to the UN. To the UN General Assembly, certainly, because there would be very great prospect of success in some sort of resolution there. But the Security Council is what it is. So this would be an empty gesture at the Security Council, which would not bother the United States at all. But if it's of importance to
Iran, I totally disagree. It would damage their credibility.
In whose eyes?
It would damage their credibility and image in the world.
I think their credibility and image has been damaged by the withdrawal from the JCPOA. The United Nations Security Council would not endorse a resolution of this kind. But it's something you can, and no doubt Iran can pursue if it wishes to, through diplomatic channels with a nation like France. And maybe something could be done, but it will not. It's not going to. Don't think that this is going to embarrass Trump. I mean, look at the way he behaves. Some of his statements are very, what can we say, extraordinary. So you know, I mean, the United States of America is the United States of America.
Right.
They're not going to be embarrassed by the UN Security Council.
Okay, Dr. Afrasiabi, in conclusion here, the EU is not just fighting for Iran. It's not because they have such strong compassion for Iran, but it is a fight for themselves because they know that Trump does not like the EU as a whole. It has said that before in the past. So they need to make a stance. They need to stand up to the U.S. because they have future trade dealings with the U.S. on an individual basis that Trump has said bilaterally, I'm going to be tackling each and every one of you. So the EU going out of its way to make sure this stands up for this. Are they going to be successful when it comes to Iran to make an example for Trump?
I really hope and pray that they are, because EU has invested its own credibility, sovereignty, and so forth online over this matter. They need to go to the World Trade Organization and complain against the U.S. for distorting world trade and not confine and limit themselves to this grand carnival of verbal expressions without follow-up action. We need to have tangible, serious, concrete measures that penalizes the U.S., that protects the material interests in Iran and guarantees all those necessary items that Iran has asked for, such as item Article 22 of the JCPOA that allows the sale of commercial airplanes and parts to Iran that is now banned by the order of the U.S. Treasury Department. So EU needs to stand up, and if it says we're going to protect the JCPOA, protect these specific provisions of the JCPOA that are very seriously violated by the U.S.
Very well. We're going to end with that. Thank you very much for that, Dr. Kaveh Afrasiabi, author and political scientist from Boston. Thank you, William Morris, Secretary General of the Next Century Foundation. Thanks for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For me, Kaveh Tawai, entire team in the capital of Tehran, is goodbye.